The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here for the second hour of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We talk about fishing and hunting and the great outdoors, and that's what we do here. And we don't get into a whole lot of other stuff. We have a guest this morning. John Mullican is on the line from up in Western Maryland. We're going to introduce John. We do have a couple phone calls left over from the last hour. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. We got a couple of phone calls here left over from the last hour. We got to take them first, if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
All right. Here. Hang on there. There's John Mullican. You got John locked in, Bethany? Hey, Stan, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
What's up, brother? Good morning. How you doing?
Just a quick, hey, Mr. Allen, I'm running the city streets, so if you hear an ouch, you'll know it hurts.
All right, got it.
Just called to get into the contest and tell you we're still listening. Lost about the first 45 minutes, but we're back in town for about another 35.
All right.
We'll be listening. Always a pleasure, Mr. Allen.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, sir.
Keep the shiny side up there, Stan.
Thanks, man.
All right, bud. See ya. Bye-bye. There he goes. There goes Stan. Can you get Stan's line off of there, and we'll talk to Wesley. There we go. Good morning, Wesley. How are you doing, buddy?
Good morning, Alan.
What's going on?
Hey, listen, I just wanted to know if there's any events coming up with the Hunters Coalition.
Maryland Hunting Coalition. Yep, February 4th in Annapolis, our Hunters Rally. In Annapolis, February 4th from 9 to 11 at the State House. We gather at about 8:30 down there in the parking lot at the Naval Academy. And that information is online, I believe. And then the benefit is March 26th in Westminster. That's a Saturday, noon to 4. And that's also online. You can check that out on the Maryland Hunting Coalition website, which is mdhuntingcoalition.org.
Very good, very good. Thank you, sir.
I hope you'll be with us at the benefit. Maybe you can consider coming down to Annapolis for the Hunters Rally on February 4th.
I marked it on my calendar.
That's a Thursday.
I'm hoping to be able to get off work for it.
We talked to a sponsor the other day. I think we're going to have a sponsor for our hats again this year, which will be great. We were at a political meeting Thursday night on one of our initiatives on the upper in the northeast corridor there of Maryland, and met with a number of the delegates and a couple of senators up there, and had a good meeting. So we'll let you know as things progress and as the bills get launched and as the initiatives get underway, we'll keep everybody informed as to what we're doing. And that's one project that we're working on. There's another one that's even bigger on a statewide basis. We're deeply involved in. When people hear about that, I suspect they're going to have some positive results on that. But as always, Wesley, you give me the opportunity to ask for the support of our listeners. Maryland Hunting Coalition is supported by hunters, for hunters. And we have about an $80,000 budget that we have to hit every year, and some of that's marketing, and some of that's advocacy, and some of that's political contributions. And we just ask you to look at the mdhuntingcoalition.org website, join up. There's a place there to contribute and help us out. And if you'd like to come to one of our events, you're certainly welcome to do so.
Thank you. I appreciate all your hard work.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks, Wes. Bye-bye. There we go. Now, John Mullican. Still with me, John?
Yes, I am.
All right, good. Tell me your tell our listeners your title again, John.
Well, excuse me. I'm the District 2 manager in the Western Region for Inland Fisheries.
District 2 manager for Inland Fisheries. Okay. And tell me what your duties involve, John.
Well, we're responsible for managing the sport fish in that region, which includes all of Washington County, Frederick County, and the non-tidal Potomac River from Cumberland to the D.C. line.
Cumberland to the D.C. line. Where does the Potomac actually start in Maryland?
It's above Jennings-Randolph Lake, then we have Jennings-Randolph Lake, and then we have a tailwater trout fishery.
Right.
And as you progress downstream, temperatures become a little bit warmer. Mm-hmm. We have a transition over to smallmouth and the other warm water fish, and that continues for more than 160 miles and offers a lot of opportunities for fishermen.
160 miles. And where does the Potomac become tidal?
Just below Little Falls, in the vicinity of Chain Bridge.
Below Little Falls in the vicinity of Chain Bridge. Okay. And that's near D.C., pretty close, right?
Yes, that's actually in D.C.
In D.C., yep. All right, cool. All right, we just want to kind of get a feel for what we're talking about here to let the folks know how big of a stretch of river that you guys are responsible for. And then, of course, you deal with the other freshwater species and in that area as well, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about the upper river and Jennings Randolph. You've got walleyes and other species in Jennings Randolph, and then you've got the tailwater trout fishery. And what's available right there at the tailwater? Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, that's in another region.
Uh-huh.
That's in our District 1 of the Western Region, but we have...
And we've talked to Alan Swan up there, and we've talked to Matt Sell and those guys, and so...
Right.
Yeah.
It's a great trout fishery there. They have some very large trophy trout available.
Sure.
It's brown trout, rainbow trout.
Mm-hmm.
And that will extend quite a ways downstream, and it's, you know, one of the few opportunities in Maryland that you can take a Western-style float trip for trout.
Yes, exactly. Good. All right, and then where does District 2 start then?
Well, I have all of Washington and Frederick County.
Now in Cumberland, okay.
River, it's in Cumberland.
Okay.
Generally, our boundary is the dam with what they call Blue Bridges in Cumberland.
Okay. And that's your territory from Blue Bridges on down, right?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Good. Just want to try and get oriented here. Okay. That area is known for smallmouth bass, correct?
That's correct. Smallmouth because smallmouth is our most iconic and popular sport fish in the river. Many fishermen are surprised to learn that it's actually not a native fish to the river. They were introduced in the late 1800s and found the river to their liking and have spread throughout the river and the tributaries, and they can be found in good numbers from Cumberland and even west of Cumberland all the way down and into the tidal portions.
Mm-hmm. So the smallmouth will make the transition to tidal?
Yes.
Limited number, I'm sure.
Yes, and you find them in the D.C. section. Salinities are low there, there are some smallmouth down there. And generally, that habitat is more favorable for largemouth. As you mentioned, you won't see, they're not going to be as prevalent, but there are some smallmouth down there, and some of them get quite large.
Yeah, okay. I think our state record's still 8-4 out of Liberty Reservoir. Gary Peters is still the record holder of smallmouth, but river smallmouth get old, but I don't think they get quite that big, do they?
No, we have we don't see any that size in the river.
Right.
Although there are some, we do see, and fishermen do collect, or fishermen do catch, some very large smallmouth. There was a smallmouth a fisherman caught this year that was 6 pounds, which is a phenomenal fish.
That's a monster for the river, absolutely.
The upper Potomac, and yeah. The largest smallmouth that we've collected during our routine surveys was 22 inches.
That's a nice fish. That's a nice fish. Just as a full disclosure here, I used to fish when I was a kid. I'm going back a long time now. When I was a kid, I used to fish the North Branch. We would drive from Berlin, Pennsylvania, down to Springfield, West Virginia. And we'd get in the river there. We'd wet wade and fish with minnows for some of those smallmouth down there. And that's, of course, that's the North Branch, I guess, of the Potomac. Is that right?
I think it's the South Branch.
Or South Branch, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're in the North Branch. And I'll tell you, that was a target species. The biggest smallmouth that we ever saw, my dad caught, was 20 and a half inches. And that was a pretty dang big smallmouth for anybody in that area. So.
Right.
Yep. But let's talk about Maryland. Let's talk about how you guys manage that fishery. Tell me a little bit about that. What kind of surveys you do and how long you've been watching the fish and what, you know, that type of thing.
Okay. Well, to manage any fishery, you have to have information. So we conduct a variety of surveys to get the information.
Right.
On the population. And for smallmouth, we have two main surveys that we do that get information. The first one is a summer seining survey.
Okay.
It's similar to the striped bass survey. We use a seine, not as large as the one that's used for that survey. It's
right.
A 30-foot seine. And we will sample a number of areas from Cumberland all the way down to Seneca, and usually it's in about 90 seine hulls each summer, and we are looking for the bass that were hatched that spring. They'll be about 1 to 3 inches, and the index that we use is our seining index is the mean number of small bass, young bass per seine hull, and we also sample two of the major tributaries in the same fashion, the Monocacy and the Conocajig in Washington County.
Right. Can you spell Conocajig in 5 seconds?
Probably not.
Yeah, that's one of those that doesn't look like it sounds. But, yeah, the Conocajig,
no.
Conocajig is actually kind of an underfished tributary, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't have the ease of access that other waters do, and it's a very shallow body of water.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, it also has a lot of aquatic vegetation, which can make it difficult to fish.
Right.
As you mentioned, the locals, we just call it the jig.
The jig, yes. Yeah, it's C-O-N-O.
But it's known for quality bass, and we did population estimate, electrofishing survey last fall, And the results were very good. It was basically all you could expect a river of that size to be.
Okay.
Smallmouth. It had a great size distribution with quality size fish present, and it's kind of known in the area for larger smallmouth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've got the seining surveys with a 30-foot seine. You go out there and haul 90 different seine. Is that 90 different sites or 90 different attempts?
Well, it's not 90 sites. We do about a dozen sites, and it's 90 hauls.
Right.
And we have an index, and this survey was first started in 1975.
Right.
And it's quite a large data set, and it gives us a great perspective on reproductive trends in the river.
Okay.
And overall, looking at the river as a whole, there has been no significant increasing or decreasing trend in reproduction of smallmouth in the river.
So it's just as steady as she goes.
Well,
up river, and down, but up, yeah, but
yeah.
Your mean line. I mean, through is pretty consistent. Is what you're saying?
That's correct. But as you mentioned, that with any particularly river populations, reproduction is quite variable. It could
sure.
be very high one year and very low the next year. Most of that is dependent on spring flows during the spawning period,
sure.
Which can reduce spawning success or fry survival. We have, we had, the fish that are produced, your year class strength will have a direct bearing on not only the relative abundance of the fishermen, the fish that fishermen will be pursuing as they get larger 4 or 5 years later, mm-hmm. but it also has a bearing on the size structure, you know, how many big fish or how many small fish are in the population on any given year.
Right. Okay. Hang on. We'll talk about recruitment when we come back from the first break. How's that sound?
Okay.
All right, cool. Time for me to tell the folks about Clyde's Sports Shop at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. Look, if you're looking for a new shotgun and you like the pump action, I'd like to recommend the BPS pump. It comes in every gauge. It comes in 410, it comes in 28, it comes in 20, 16, 12, and even 10-gauge models for a pump-action shotgun. There are two deer models available in 12-gauge and 20-gauge as well with rifled barrels for shooting Sabbath slugs. It features a bottom ejection. Comes in a DuraTouch armor coating Mossy Oak Breakup Infinity Camo finish if you like. And the waterfowl model comes with 3 Invector Plus choke tubes in the package deal. That's the BPS pump. A great pump action shotgun. Been around for a long, long time. Very dependable, very good firearm from Browning. And now you want to take a look at the autoloaders. There's 3. There's the Maxxis shotgun. It's a power gas drive system that reduces recoil, comes in 3 and 3.5-inch chambers. It's an auto loader that's waterfowl hunting perfection for those of you who love to do that. Then there's the A5. That's a recoil-operated auto loader. 100,000-round or 5-year guarantee. It comes with what's called a kinematic drive system. It's a recoil-operated recycling or shotgun shell cycling mechanism. It's balanced ergonomically. It's got a Vector Pro length and forcing cones. It's got 12-gauge models are available in your standard walnut and blue, camo, and even black synthetic finishes. And then for the guy that wants a lot of firepower, the Gold Light 10-gauge, standard auto loader, gas operated, 3.5-inch chamber, 10-gauge model. Comes a composite stock with the DuraTouch armor coating, Mossy Oak camo finish, and also 3 choke tubes with that. These are some shotgun choices from Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. Website's ClydeSports.com. Open 7 days a week. Take all major credit cards. Go see the Brownings. You're from your full-line Browning dealer, Clyde Sports Shop. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Linex spray-on bedliners are rated number 1 and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose a Linex premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Linex, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Deer hunters, the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge returns this season. By donating a female deer, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. And you can win a $500 gift card from Bass Pro Shops. Maryland is divided into 3 regions with 20 chances to win in each region plus junior hunt days drawings. Just donate your doe through any FHFH deer processor and fill out the entry card. That's it. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons as fun. funding allows. The 2015 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit www.fhfh.org.
Stay connected. Listen on AM 680 or stream us on your PC, tablet, or phone at WCBM.com.
New frequency detected.
Well, I pulled out of Pittsburgh, rolling down that eastern seaboard. I got my diesel wound up and she's running like I never before. There's a speed zone ahead, but all right. I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home.
Send that out for our truck driving buddies and Stan in particular. Dave Goodman for you.
I'm taking little white pills in my eyes, I hope in white.
Uh-oh, you don't want to do that anymore.
I just passed the Jimmy in a wine. I've been a-passing everything in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home.
All right, we're with John Mollican, who is the Fisheries District 2 Manager of Inland Fisheries up in the western part of the state, covering the Potomac River and others. Let me grab a little coffee here and we'll get right back to John. Oh, that's good coffee. And we have a caller. Let's talk to, is John locked in? Let's lock John in. And James in Pasadena. Good morning, James. What's up?
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
We had a problem here with snake fish. We try to eradicate them, and somebody says, well, let's start eating them. Well, I saw a little snippet in the headline a couple of days ago in the newspaper that they may be poisonous. There's some kind of a chemical in their brain, and if you eat the fish, you don't get that chemical out of the meat. You can either get sick or die from it. Have you heard anything about that?
John, there's one for you.
I believe what you may be referring to is a recent publication from the USGS regarding a bacteria, that mycobacteria that has been identified in a small sample of snakeheads collected from the tidal Potomac. It's a bacteria that has been found in more than 160 species of fresh and saltwater fish. It's a bacteria that can be transferred to humans, but if you use safe fish handling practices when you're cleaning fish, there's some common sense things, and most people, when you're handling a fish, if the fish has lesions, open sores, lesions, or appears diseased in any way, most people will discard that fish. It's usually not very appetizing, so you don't want to eat it anyway. But if a fish appears, outwardly healthy, sometimes it will still carry that bacteria. But if the fish is properly prepared and cooked, there is no threat to human health from consuming that fish. Also, whenever handling any type of fish or even game, if you have any open sores or cuts on your hands, you want to protect your hands while handling the raw meat. And you may want to use heavier gloves if you're handling fish, just to keep the spines from fish from getting a puncture wound, and maybe getting contracting an infection through that manner. But if you take the simple precautions, the fish would be safe to eat.
Mycobacteria, John, is pretty much endemic in the environment, is it not?
Yes.
We've talked about myco in the striped bass, and people will occasionally catch a fish with lesions on it, and you wouldn't want to eat anyway. You just toss it back in and let it go, because it can come from any number of causes. I mean, too many fish in the school rubbing against each other can.
Form of transmission is not really understood,
right.
Although mycobacteria has been isolated from fish, water,
right.
and sediments. So
right.
it's out in the environment.
Right.
But you're correct, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, now they're linking it to the disease that affects largemouth bass. It's found in snakeheads. I mean, fish swim in a pretty soupy environment with a lot of different bacteria and things like that. Hey, James, thanks for the call. We'll get into that another time, but let's get back to where we're talking about. Well, while we're on snakeheads, let's talk about the snakeheads in the Potomac.
Okay.
And then we'll go back to the smallmouth, okay?
So, okay.
Since we're, I'm sorry I'm skipping around here, but.
No problem.
All right.
We conducted some surveys in the CNO canal.
Right.
That were based on reports to rangers within the CNO Canal Park in the vicinity of Great Falls.
Right.
They had reported that fishermen had caught some snakeheads from the canal itself. This was particularly concerning because the section of canal that they reported catching the snakeheads was upstream of Great Falls.
Right.
And because there is so much water exchange between the Potomac and the canal itself, any snakehead population that develops in the canal is with certainty going to find its way into the upper Potomac above the falls. And unfortunately, electrofishing efforts by the Maryland Department of Natural Resources with assistance with the Fish and Wildlife Service this past spring did document a juvenile snakehead within the canal in the vicinity of Violet's Lock.
Okay.
Which is, Violet's Lock receives direct water input through the lock itself from the Potomac into the canal, and then there's overflow below, just above each lock, there's an overflow.
Right.
So excess water can flow back to the river. So
if you got one in the canal, you're going to have them in the river.
Yeah. I have not documented any snakehead from the river, the Potomac main stem, to this point. We know it's coming. The fish are with certainty have escaped into the river.
Right.
And that's why have a campaign to educate fishermen that they are present, what they look for, and anyone that catches a snakehead from the canal or the non-tidal Potomac is encouraged to kill the fish,
right.
Harvest them to eat. They are great to eat.
Yeah.
And to report their catch with as much detail on location as possible to fishingreports.dnr
at maryland.gov.
At maryland.gov.
So fishingreports.dnr at maryland.gov. If you have a report of a snakehead, you should, if you catch one, you should report it to that particular email address, right?
Yes, that will provide us a lot of information on how these are spreading, where they're spreading, and how best, if possible, to direct control measures.
Yeah. John, years ago, we had a similar threat from the bowfin. Do you recall all the posters and that type of thing that the department would put out along the river about catching bowfins and how horrible they were?
I do. Actually, the bowfin is a native species, but
right.
I do remember those signs and when I first started work way back when in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But I must say, in all my years of working on the river, and I have yet to see a bowfin.
Yeah, I know. I've caught a couple of them, and they're a tremendous fish. I mean, as far as a fighting fish, I don't know how they are to eat. But I've caught several of them, and they are just one of the strongest fighting fish you ever want to imagine. Mm-hmm. But I remember those signs, and I remember the warnings about the bowfins, and I'm not sure, what the danger was at that point or what they were talking about other than it was a, top-tier predator. But I don't know if they were considering it as some kind of a danger to the native fishery or not. But never panned out, did it?
Like I said, I have not seen
exactly.
a bowfin during my entire career.
Exactly. So, But the snakeheads are here, and they are present, and it's probably not a good thing to have them here. So let's continue to do what we need to do and keep the information out there. Let people know that they're present. Let people know that they are an invasive species, a non-native invasive species, and they are harmful to our native species, and are harmful to our river system, our ecosystem there. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
All right. Now, let's talk about smallmouth bass, back to smallmouth bass, since a lot of our listeners like to catch smallmouth bass, including me.
Including me?
Including everybody, I think. you hook a nice smallmouth in the river, you got a little fight on light tackle, that's for sure. So, you were telling me earlier that we have kind of a median line that doesn't go up or down very much as far as any, you know, downturn or upturn in the population. It's kind of a whole steady holding pattern in the river, but of course it's got annual variances based on that type of thing. So am I right on that? I mean, how are we doing?
How are we doing on
the smallmouth?
Well, there's lots of annual variation, and the variation can be by an order of magnitude even. I mean, from one year to the next. Now, there hasn't been a positive or negative trend long-term. That's over the 38-year period that we've been conducting the survey. However, in more recent years, reproduction has been below what we would like it to see, and there have not been any dominant year classes since 2007, which was a record year class. And we have a number of very poor year classes. 2009, 2013, and 14 were very poor year classes. And, you know, that will be reflected in the size distribution that fishermen will see when they're fishing and catch rates. We had, in 2005, 2006, and 2007 were all very strong year classes, with 2007 being the record year class, the highest we documented during the course of the survey. And as those three consecutive very strong years moved through the population as those fish got older, in 2011 we had the highest catch rates that we've ever had for quality size smallmouth, as all those fish now were of the age that they would be quality-sized fish.
Sure. Now, what are you calling a quality-sized fish? 15 inches, 18 inches, what?
Well, it's roughly 12 inches. It's actually,
oh, okay.
There's a size distribution standard that's used in fisheries, and it's actually 11 inches.
Okay.
It's generally what would be considered a legal size or in Maryland and most places.
How long does it take a fish to reach legal size, a 12-inch size?
Well, their fish are individuals. There's a lot of variation in that.
Right.
And there's also variation within the river. The fish in the far western stretches will grow slower than fish in the lower sections downstream of Harper's Ferry. So
right.
For the fish in the western sections, they may be 5 or 6 years to reach 12 inches, and you may see a 12-inch fish in the lower sections, it may only be 4 years.
Okay, all right. So it takes a while. I mean, they're not overnight growers, as any species are in a river system, as we talked about earlier. In the lakes and ponds, we have these fish attaining greater sizes earlier because it's just availability of food. They're not fighting the current, or you know, that type of thing. And so the as we mentioned, is a 6-pound river smallmouth is a giant, whereas that fish, if it were given the same opportunity in a deep water reservoir, might be a little bit bigger at a little sooner time in its life. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
And because of the growth rates and the time it takes, you know,
right.
A lot of times, you know, you may have spring conditions that cause poor year classes, and it's easy to forget about that 4 or 5 years later.
Of course.
When now there's less fish, and that's what happened with those three strong year classes. We had some particularly good fishing in 2011 and 12, as those fish were quality fish.
Sure.
They have since, each year that those fish are in the population, a certain percentage of those fish dies off,
yeah.
And as they get older and older, they're less of an impact in the fishery, and we're at the point now where a lot of those fish have moved out of the fishery, and
right.
The four-year classes have moved in. So we have we see a lower catch rate of quality size fish
at
this moment, but not a great deal. It's slightly below the last 9-year average.
All right, hang on. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a little break. Tell the folks about the Maryland Fishing Challenge, free year-round, and then we'll get to Jeff's call. Wants to talk to you about the Potomac. The Maryland Fishing Challenge is a free year-round tournament. It's hosted by the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service for everyone who fishes recreationally in Maryland. All game fish are eligible, from the Atlantic to the Chesapeake to the Potomac to the Susquehanna to the Deep Creek Lake to all those freshwater streams, almost 70 species. There's a freshwater category, a Chesapeake Bay tidal category, there's the Atlantic Coast category, even special categories for catch and release and invasive species. There's a youth division part of the Fishing Challenge connected to the free online Maryland Youth Fishing Club. Just catch a fish of a notable specified size. You get your official angler award certificate and an invitation to the grand finale in September, where you could win a Tracker Marine boat package or lots of other great prizes from lots of other great sponsors and even some cash. Fish are biting right now in the Potomac. They're biting in the Chesapeake Bay. They're biting in Deep Creek Lake. They're biting on the Eastern Shore ponds. They're biting in the tidal rivers. They're biting offshore, inshore. You name it. It's not the time to stay indoors. The weather's great. Go fish. The official rules are online at dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries.
Some big changes as far as our temperature is into this weekend as some cooler air makes an appearance. A front will produce some showers at times during this morning and also into the afternoon. And temperatures will fall and eventually dip down to the mid-50s later today. Rain is going to exit into the evening. Overnight some breaks in the clouds with a low dropping down to 41. Wrapping up the weekend tomorrow dry with a high near 59 under a sunny sky. And then on Monday it will be sunny and also slightly warmer with a high temperature close to 60. Rain will be possible by Tuesday. I'm Jeff Maher from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
This week on Fox News Sunday, you'll hear interviews with the top newsmakers of the week and analysis of the top news stories by our distinguished panel of political experts. This is Chris Wallace. Join me this Sunday at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Okay, we're back with John Mulliken, and we want to talk to Jeff in Baltimore. So let's get Jeff in here with John. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Howdy. Fine, thank you.
Good. You had a question about the Potomac for John Mulliken.
Yeah. I was just wondering, I'm a person who likes to get in the water as opposed to a boat, and I was wondering, out in the Potomac, even out in western Maryland, or even west, not so far west, are there opportunities to wade the Potomac, or is it generally a boat fishing type water? Can you wade or do some land fishing as opposed to having to get into a boat and have success? And a muskie too. I'd like to try and get one of them.
There's lots of opportunities for wading. Of course, that's going to be kind of location and water level permitting. There's areas like Brunswick is a, would be an excellent area for wading. There's a lot of shallow water there, with great habitat for smallmouth, a lot of rocks and ledges and it's fantastic habitat, a lot of, targets of opportunity there. There's another very popular area for wading, a little further west, area known as Pack Horse Ford. It's a, it's down below Shepherdstown, about a mile or so, and can be accessed from Canal Road. There's lots of shallow water there, and all of this, of course, is water levels permitting. I mean, the river is never what I would determine to be safe, but if you take precautions and wade at the lower water levels that you typically would have in June and July and August and September, you should have a lot of opportunities there. You can always, when you have more time, you can always contact my office. You can contact me directly, and I'd be happy to talk with you about specific locations and where you can go. But yes, there are lots
Thank
of
you.
Opportunities for
Thank
fishing.
You very much.
Get in on wading, and get in on some of the.
I think I'm kind of losing a little contact. I'm sorry.
Definitely, there's opportunities.
Okay, Jeff, there's opportunities. Well, I guess he left. Jeff, there's definitely opportunities up there for you. Jeff, I hope you heard enough to get in touch with John Mullican, and it's john.mullican, M-U-L-L-I-C-A-N, at maryland.gov, right, John?
That's correct.
All right, good. Let's talk to Dale in Easton. Good morning, Dale. How are you?
Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I'd like to ask John about the situation regarding the bisexual nature of the smallmouth bass. I know there was many years ago, even when I was still there was a question regarding finding dual sex in smallmouth, and I haven't heard much about it recently. I just wonder if that situation has been studied more, and it's not the if it's calmed down at all.
Yes, you're referring to the intersex, and
yes.
That condition in smallmouth is highly prevalent in the Potomac watershed, as it is in the other similar river systems in the Mid-Atlantic. Yes, it is still being studied through cooperative projects with the USGS as well as our neighboring states. It's not a condition that's unique to the Potomac, and so the research is taking a more region-wide approach, looking at the similarities and differences and within the watersheds in the Mid-Atlantic and the impact on the smallmouth. The intersex condition in smallmouth is it can have a negative impact on reproduction. And it also can lower their immune system, making them more susceptible to parasites and pathogens. So there are some implications for that on a population level. It's a difficult and slow process to kind of refine what are the predominant chemicals or contaminants in the water that might be inducing the intersex, because there's such a complex mixture of those chemicals in the water. We're looking at the timing. It's believed that the intersex is induced mainly early in the life stages while the fish are on the nest in the spring. And we're looking, we've collected fish this spring working with the USGS, both adults and young of year smallmouth, and looking at contaminants, looking at parasites and other issues, fish health related issues with those fish, and yes, we are continuing to study the situation with the intersex. And by narrowing down the seasonal timing and the contaminants that are probably most influencing the development of intersex, then we can once you know what those chemicals are, then you can begin to take steps to reduce the input of those chemicals or contaminants into the environment and hopefully reduce the incidence of intersex in smallmouth bass. Smallmouth bass seem particularly susceptible to that condition. and we see the incidence in smallmouth is much higher than other species. And a lot of the other species that have been looked at, we don't see that in the fish. But it's not just even a regional issue. It's something that's occurring, nationally and even worldwide.
That's right. Yep.
And so yes, we are continuing to investigate that, and each investigation gets a little closer. You know, you get more answers, and then the ultimate goal is to reduce the input of the chemicals that are inducing that intersex condition, and reduce their input into the environment.
There you go, Dale.
All right.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see you, Dale. John, hang on there. We're going to take our final break, and then we'll get back with some closing comments, if that's okay. Need to tell the folks one more time about Clyde Sports Shop and all the great Browning firearms. I want to talk about high-powered rifles right now. We talked about shotguns earlier. The X-Bolt. I'll tell you something, folks. The X-Bolt. Now, I took my bear last week with an A-Bolt, one of the original A-Bolts, in the 300 Win Mag, and I love that gun. It just shoots phenomenally, and just put it right on the mark at 200 yards on that bear. And the X-Bolt is extremely accurate, bolt action, big game hunting perfection. It is a tremendous, a high-powered rifle from Clyde Sports Shop. It comes in all standard calibers, all magnum calibers, all short magnum calibers. It has what they call an adjustable feather trigger, and the detachable rotary magazine is pretty cool. When I was not hunting, I would just flip the press the button, and the floor plate would drop. I'd take the magazine out of the firearm, shut it back up, and I could stow it wherever I wanted it. I could put the clip in my pocket, in my pack, or whatever. And when I went out to hunt, I just slammed it back in there, and everything was fine. Now, the best deal going on a high-powered rifle in Maryland today is the AB3, the A-Bolt 3, the third rendition of the A-Bolt. It is a package gun. Now, listen, some of the packages that you can buy from some of the manufacturers are, they're all right. But you can tell they're just all right. They're just put together, slammed together, and I've seen them, let's take a look at the AB3. The AB3 is a quality firearm. It comes with a 3-9 Redfield scope, not some unmarked thing. This is a Redfield scope. It's a beautiful scope, 3-9 power, and it comes with a hard ABS case. Now, the A-Bolt 3 comes in a synthetic stock and a blued barrel. It is comes in all, selected standard magnum, short magnum calibers, like 243, 270, 30-06, 308. Comes in 300 Win Mag, comes in 7mm Mag, and some others. You might want to check that out if you are in the market for a great value on a high-powered bolt-action rifle for big game hunting, for deer, for bear, for elk. If you're going out west, if you're going on a mule deer hunt, an elk hunt, and you want something a little bigger, a little better, where do we find all these things? Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. 2307 on your GPS in Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne. You can visit their website at Clyde's Sports, 2 S's in the middle, .com. They have a full gunsmithing service. They have all the ammunition. They'll mount scopes for you on your firearm if you need a scope mounted. They have a great selection of optics. They are your full-line Browning dealer. They carry all the Browning shotguns, and we're not pricing anything here because they're priced on request. When you go, you can ask the price right there. Why not give them a call, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108 for Clyde's Sports Shop.
Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. You know, Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did, the Linex Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything, their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, hunters, you could win a $500 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons as funding allows. Maryland is divided into three regions with 20 chances to win in each region, plus junior hunt days drawings. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor, fill out the entry card, that's it. By donating your doe, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. The 2015 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit www.fhfh.org.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. We're back cold, that's for sure. So we're with John Mollican, who's Fisheries District 2 manager, inland fisheries up in the western part of the state. Washington County is where the headquarters are. And, John, we have about a minute or so left. We just want to hit some high points here. The electrofishing surveys from 2015 turned out pretty well with some smallmouth, right?
Yes, they did. You know, our catch rate for quality smallmouth was slightly below the last 9-year average, but
right.
But we got quite a few very nice fish. We had three bass, three smallmouth, 20 inches and greater, and
wow.
15 that were over 18 inches. So,
and some good walleyes.
Yeah, we did see walleyes. There's a number of 23 to 27 inch walleyes.
Nice.
The population is kind of top heavy now with older fish.
Okay.
But this year, we did see, we have one of our stronger year classes of walleye.
Right. The music's starting, so we're quickly running out of time here. We got about 10, 15 seconds left. Tell us about the dead muskie, how big it was.
Well, we did find a dead muskie during our surveys that measured 50 and a half inches, which is the largest muskie that we've ever documented.